We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the Sunday night slash Monday morning version, however, wherever you happen to be living time zone wise. I'm Scott Jensta. Jeff Erickson is out for one more week, so I will not. He'll be back next Sunday, but I'm joined this week by a special guest, Toby, also known as Batflip Crazy on Twitter, big NFBC player, has his own podcast. Also, everybody probably knows who he is. Toby, thanks for jumping on. I really appreciate it. I think that we've done like live streams together. I don't know if we've ever done like a full podcast. So this should be fun.
Toby. Yeah. I think we did like Potapalooza together. Yeah. Something like that. But really appreciate the opportunity to be here. And this is a podcast I listen to all the time. And I know people know it as kind of the gold standard in fantasy baseball. So really honored that you invited me, Scott, and I know big shoes to fill with Jeff's absence. So I'll do my best.
We'll go with medium shoes. That's fine.
Yeah, like size 10, something like that.
Oh yeah, there you go. I'm 9.5, so that's, I kind of put that right in the middle somewhere. So I appreciate you wearing the A's hat. That's a good shout right there. I do. You're starting out well, so that's good.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this was very deliberate. Took my 7-year-old to his first game that he could really understand what was happening. It was an A's game recently, so
nice.
Got this snazzy gear. I like your shirt too. I haven't seen that one, but I like it a lot.
It's like a baseballism or one of the like fancy company shirts, but it's a cool one. Yeah, I was gonna say my daughter's been to a bunch of games because we know some people, and we knew Brad Ziegler who pitched for many years. Mm-hmm. So we've been to a couple games, and I remember the first game we were at Petco. And Jose Urena came up and gave her a ball. And I'm like, you're never going to top that. You get a ball from your first game. And I'm like, oh, it's Jose Urena. So maybe not that great, but, you know, it works. So
tell her it was somebody different, like somebody a little bit better.
I'll tell her it was Jazz Chisholm because she won't know that the dates don't match up. We'll be good. When he gets in the Hall of Fame, we'll just call it that. It'd be good. So
it sounds good.
So before we jump into Fab, as we do on Sunday nights, I want to talk a couple just basic things with you. Some NFBC strategy, kind of look at week 12 a little bit. I think you and I are kind of in the same spot NFBC-wise, kind of middling so far. I think and correct me if I'm wrong there, but I think you're like, you know, a lot of fifth and sixth places. And, you know, that's not a horrible spot to be on whatever we are, June 13th. Obviously, you want to be a little better. And I know you've won, what have you won, 4 or 5 main events?
I won 4. I won 1 right. 2 years ago and then 3 of the sprint ones. So those count as a third of a season. I think I'm at like a total of 2.
That's still any main event league is pretty good. So, but I want to ask you, like you're in the middle of the pack right now. How are you kind of figuring out these last 2 months? Like, what do you do on a Sunday or a Saturday or Friday, whatever? I think you do late Saturday night. What do you do? What do you do to like kind of figure out a way to gain points this innings? Like, how are you strategizing right now to kind of get back in the mix here?
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing I think is important is just to have patience and like to look at my own players and think about like, how do I think they're doing? Does it seem like this is a reasonable pace that they have, either on the good side or the bad side? Because sometimes like we've seen, like with Ramon Laureano, for instance, earlier this year, he has 8 stolen bases in the first week and then he's got none, right? And you have guys you've been relying on for speed who may have 3 or 4 only so far. And so do you feel like there's going to be an uptick there?
Yeah.
I always take a look at the standings, like the league standings, before I go into my fab, just to kind of think through like, are there categories where I'm very behind in that I really need to start working now?
Yeah.
But generally, I'm focused more on just getting the best players at this point, unless there's a glaring need that I have.
Yeah. Do you have any glaring needs at this point? Have you found that as you went through draft season, you're really struggling somewhere?
Oh, I've got some glaring needs.
yeah, you and me both. I have a team that that started Luis Castillo. So ratios are a huge need. And Zach Plesac was my third pitcher in that league. So it's, you know, I'm out of 1 point ERA. I'm up to like five, and it's been a huge grind to get there. And it feels like it's funny when you're doing well in pitching, like you're like, oh, I give up two runs. That's fine. Now, when you're doing badly in pitching, like every hit, every run, like feels terrible. Like I had Antonio Senzatella today. And like he struggled early and then kind of got it going and he gave up three runs. And all of a sudden he gave up two runs in the sixth. I'm like, oh man, those are inherited runs scored. Then suddenly gets to five. And it seems like you're going badly. Like all those inherited runs score. It's just maddening.
Oh, for sure. That's actually why I go heavy on pitching early on, is just for my own mental health. Like as the season yeah. progresses, like making sure that, because it's true, earlier on in the season, I was really struggling badly. I had a lot of teams that were like around 400th in the overall for the main event. I have four teams this year. And it really does have an impact on you.
It does.
And your perspective. And like you mentioned, it just feels like things snowball. So you start making bad decisions when you're struggling with pitching because you're like, I need to make up all these different categories. For me, it's been the closers. Like I've always been somebody who says, you know, grab guys who are solid closers, but kind of middle round closers, you know, the ironically, the Mark Melansons of last year or the Brandon Kinslers of last year, you know, not this year, of course. And it just hasn't worked out for me. And with so many teams now going to the committees, it's just so hard to pick the week to have that guy in there. Like, do I really want to have like a closer by committee guy in there who's going to maybe have three outings? If he's lucky, he's going to get one save, like where I could have a starter or a two-start pitcher who can actually help me in those other places. And I've never been able to catch up. I have one league with two. I have one league with seven. I have another league with 11. And I think the most I have in any league is 14. And so I'm really falling behind there. And it's just been really hard to catch up.
I think hidden this year in the, you know, you can find saves on the wire. You can always catch up in saves. The fact that there are all these teams that are losing closers or replacing closers aren't doing it with one guy. They're doing it with committees. They're doing it with, like, it used to be like, you know, Jonathan Papelbon get hurt and the obvious guy would come in. I forget who it was, but, and then, you know, and Kenny Jansen became, we always like knew who the next guy up was, or if there wasn't, at least they put someone in there and they, like, even if it wasn't great, he would get save ops. It seems like there's, you know, six, eight teams now that you're like, well, their closer's struggling. Like, I'm going to go ahead and find somebody. And then you realize that there's four guys there too. Like, I looked this week at, like, you know, Arizona, like Soria blew their one save. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, well, there's nobody there. And then, you know, Ian Kennedy got hurt. I'm like, oh, there's nobody there. It's just that next guy up mentality has been gone. And it's hard to catch up when you can't luck into that guy that has 25 saves the last 4 months.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just been a carousel. It's been like Lucas Sims is the embodiment of it, where it's like, you drafted him hoping he was the closer, and then like he wasn't initially, so you probably dropped him. Then he became the closer, got two saves 1 week. Then you pick him up, you have him in your lineup, doesn't get any the next three weeks. Then he gets two the week you drop him.
Yep.
And it is difficult. And it really, like, for me at a certain point, I was just like, I'm spending $120 trying to get Hansel Robles.
Yeah.
And what I know deep in my heart is, number one, like, he's gonna like get back to where he was 2 years ago. But also, like, he's not the solid closer. And so I can't spend that type of money chasing saves in a committee where it's just not going to happen. And so I'm trying to save my resources for when, you know, a guy does come on the market, or when there is a closer or a team that has gone with a steady closer who goes there. But who knows when that's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, and I hope it comes too, because I'm in that boat. Like, I had Ryan Pressly and Jake McGee, and all of a sudden I'm like set. I don't have to worry about anything. And then, you know, Jake McGee went from nine saves in the first 3 weeks to one or two since. So it's been tough. But let's go on to week 12. It's a fun week. It's a big week. There's a lot of teams with seven games. We have 16 teams with seven games. Only one plays five this week, which is always nice. You don't have to worry quite as much about those two game half weeks that we deal with in the NFBC. Coors is home all week this week too. They face the Rockies face the Padres three times, face the Brewers four times. Who are you? Were there teams you were really looking to attack their schedules this week, obviously, aside from Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Brewers were one team that I was really looking to get after. They've got the four games in Colorado.
Yep.
at the end of the week, and also the first three at Cincinnati, which isn't super easy, but you know, at least it's not one of the more difficult rotations that are out there. And one of the things about them is they don't, you know, any team that has any offensive capability and plays their guys regularly, their guys are going to be snatched up already. So, you know, your Daniel Vogelbach, your Jackie Bradley Juniors, who maybe in a regular week you wouldn't be as interested in. Those were some of the kind of the names that I was looking at this year, just in terms of like what their schedule looked like.
Yeah. And obviously San Diego going into Colorado is nice, and they get four against Cincinnati. The Giants are nice too. The Giants have seven home games, four against Arizona, three against Philly. Like, that's a bunch of pitching you want. But weirdly, the Giants, would they have four runs all weekend or something like that? Like, suddenly they went from hitting all the most home runs in the league and just breaking to the last four games. I think Kyle Schwarber out RBA'd them today against their whole team over the weekend. So it was a weird weekend where they actually split their series with Washington, but scored like, I think it was four runs total across four games.
Yeah, making Joe Ross look like, Max Scherzer when you have Joe Ross, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, it's tough. But even with the Giants, you know, it's like they mix and match so much. And sometimes it's really clear based on the platoon, but then other times it's like they're just going with the flow. So it's always fun, but definitely I think this week, like you mentioned, because there wasn't as many five game weeks, it felt like offensively, you know, there's some potential on the wire.
Yeah, I mean, and Toronto's going to go play in Buffalo a little bit, which has been good. They have three at Camden also, which is a great place to hit. The problem with Toronto is all their players are picked up anyway. There's really, unless you're going to go for like a Reese McGuire or pick up Riley Adams as a catcher too or something like that, you're not really going to get much from Toronto. But after they scored 18 runs today, I think it's pretty clear that this offense might be the best in the league.
Yeah, there's a guy named Vlad Guerrero Jr. who's pretty decent.
I wasn't going to bring him up the whole time. I made a promise. I was going no Vlad Guerrero jokes the whole time.
It's got to be in there. It's got to be in there. It's a shtick at this point. So I'm
21 bombs. My God. I mean, and as much as people give you crap for that, like, nobody saw 21 home runs on June 13th either. So it's crazy. I mean, I think we all knew that there was a switch to be flipped at some point. And I obviously listened to your podcast with Bubba, and kind of as you guys walked through that, and a lot of it made a lot of sense. And at some point, you know, you have to make good decisions, and in those decisions, based on research and reason, and, you know, having a reason for everything, you're going to have some that miss. And, you know, I think we all have some of those, and they're never fun when they do. I was a fade on Shane Bieber last year. So, I feel you. It's, When you do fades and targets and all that kind of stuff, you're going to miss some, because if you don't, that means you're not taking, you know, kind of strong enough stances, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm trying to have fun with it, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you know, I had a reason for like not liking Vlad coming into the year, like you mentioned, but it's funny because we always like to talk about the guys. Like, I have gifts for every time Eddie Rosario hits a home run or whatever, right? I mean, at some point, right, we also have to own it when we make a mistake. And
for
we
sure.
never want to do that. And it sucks for the people who listen to us, right? And if they took that to heart and didn't draft him. But hopefully there's other guys, like, you know, Marcus Semien, for instance, who, you know, is a guy from that team that I have a lot of. And those are I'm hoping that when I look at the box score, that I see him as the guy who hit the home run and not necessarily Vlad Jr. But
It was nice that our long lost cousin Teoscar hit two bombs for us today. No, we're doing a podcast together. It was nice of him to celebrate that occasion for us.
Oh, absolutely. He knew it was happening.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure he's listening. He's probably watching right now. So shout out to Teoscar. So let's jump into some fab. It felt to me like a week that there was some interesting pitching out there. There was very little hitting, but we will bring up a few names that I thought were mildly interesting. But let's start with the pitching. Starting in the Bay Area, kind of close to where you are, Sammy Long in San Francisco had a really good debut. He kind of piggybacked on top of the opener, had four innings, seven strikeouts, only gave one hit, one earned run, one walk, looked really good doing so. Weirdly, not like a huge prospect. I think it was like an 18th rounder. He was actually a free agent in the offseason. The Giants just picked him up. The interesting thing with him, you look at 2019 with the White Sox in single A, he was really good. 3.06 ERA, 97 innings, a 29% strikeout rate. Like, this guy had some good stuff. And I don't know if all the COVID last year, maybe he just didn't get to an alternate site, didn't work out. But, you know, Farhan's doing a good job with the Giants. Where were you on Sammy Long? I saw the bids kind of all over the place in different leagues. I saw them over 100. I saw him in the teens. Where were you on Sam Long?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't very aggressive. I think my bids were the ones like I really looked at as a week where I was trying to conserve fab. So I wasn't super aggressive where I needed pitching. I think mine were in the low 20 range, like $22 or something like that for Long. I mean, he looked really good, obviously, with the 7 strikeouts. You know, obviously, like, it's so hard with one game, right? Talking about regression, but like his BABIP was like 100.
Yeah.
But what I really liked when I dug in is like the slider looked really good and it was getting a lot of kind of the publicity, but his changeup also did really well there. So, you know, whether he's going to be successful in the zone and how guys adjust, you know, to him in the big leagues, I think is going to be the real question for him. But there's certainly upside, like you mentioned, and even in the recent minor league history, like this year, the strikeout rate was really high as well. So, and the projections actually seem to like him a decent amount. So we'll see.
Yeah, I kind of hope they use him as like right after a first inning opener. There was some talk from the Giants, like we'd like to get the, you know, someone to the top three hitters and kind of let him go, just because I think the pitch count's going to be limited. He's thrown 5 starts this year, 4 in the minors, one in the majors if you count the piggyback start. But he hasn't topped 69 pitches yet. I think he threw like 62 or 63 in the first start. So I think that there was a quote from Kapler saying we want to get him stretched out, we want to get him a little more. But I still think like 80, 85 pitches, probably the most we see at least for the next 3 or 4 starts, which makes it really tough to get wins unless, of course, you come in the second inning and you can pitch 4 innings and get wins. So I was mildly aggressive just because I have a couple leagues where, you know, any pitcher with an upside pulse is pretty interesting to me. I got outbid in one league. He went for like 138 in one of my mains, and I got him for 57 in the other one. The backup bid was 52. So I was like, I mean, I guess it's the right bid. Who knows if it's the right player? But mildly interesting. And I think that it's been a weird year for picking up pitchers on the wire. We had, you know, we had pitchers that rookies that have gotten smoked. Logan Gilbert came up and looked bad. Looked good today though. Looked pretty. Maybe he's coming around a little bit. But that leads me into our next guy. Did you bid at all on Jackson Coar in Kansas City? I think a week ago, if he had been available, there would have been some big bids on this guy. He was dominating AAA. Came up and just got smoked twice. The A's beat him around this weekend. He got smoked early in the week. He threw 97 pitches this week, Toby, and got 6 outs. Like, that's almost like impossible to do. Like, that's really, really hard to throw that many pitches over 2 innings. 36 ERA, 1 strikeout, 5 walks. Did you jump in on him? The hard part is he faces Boston, then the Yankees the next 2 weeks. So even if you like think maybe he just kind of had to get the nerves out, like, how do you throw him in those 2 starts?
Yeah, you know, I was diving into the skills and I saw the negative 23%. K minus walk rate, and I just said, I'm gonna pass. I mean, obviously, people were really, really excited about him.
Yeah.
You know, coming up, he pitched great in the minors. We've seen guys turn it around. You mentioned Logan Gilbert. It doesn't always happen overnight. Yeah. But what I'm generally looking for is like some pulse of skills where I can be like, you know, oh, like whether it was the swinging strike rate was really nice, but the strikeouts didn't happen, or you know, he had a 600 BABIP, which he does. But there's really nothing you can point to. I mean, when you dive in, like, I think the 4-seam had like a 1% swinging strike rate.
It was only 3% total. So yeah, that sounds about right.
And the changeup, which is supposed to be kind of his bread and butter pitch, had like a 6% swinging strike rate. So like, I need to have something to latch onto and to put my hope on. And I couldn't find anything. So I wasn't in on him. But you know, would we be surprised in 3 or 4 weeks if he's, you know, another guy who's hot on the waiver wire? I certainly wouldn't be. You never know with these rookies, like, you know, one adjustment here or there in either direction, and it can make or break them.
Yeah, it was tough. I think I probably would have been like, he's in my conditionals. I was one of those, like, you know, I have a drop, maybe I'll grab him for $3 and watch the next 2 starts. But with Boston and New York and the injuries you have on benches, it was really hard to grab, knowing that there's no way you're throwing. I mean, the Yankees offense hasn't been good, but I just can't see going into Yankee Stadium and throwing him right now. Even if he pitches decently against Boston, it just seems tough. I hope it works. I mean, Daniel Lynch didn't work when he came up, and you got these Kansas City pitchers that like everybody's really high on. You want to see rookie pitchers work, but it's been an ugly rookie pitcher year so far.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
Shane McClanahan's been good, but you know, it's been few and far between.
Yeah, I was fortunate. That's the one guy that I've kind of bid hard on.
Nice.
And one thing I think is helpful is kind of looking at the projections and what they kind of see in players, because I think that's one thing with Long that was really interesting is generally the projections are very pessimistic on rookies. So when you see them coming in and the projections are at like a 3.5 ERA, something around there, I always kind of take a little bit more notice of him.
Yeah, no, it's funny because McClanahan, like, he had that first start happened to be against the A's, and I was watching and I was like, oh my God, like, this, you're like, he's throwing 102 with some tail and he throws that slider. You're like, oh, it's actually like he passes the eye test, so let me look deeper. So I did kind of the same thing. I think I got him in 1 or 2 spots, but I was maybe not aggressive enough. But you know, you still look and his ERA is still 4.5. Like, it's not
I
like
know,
he's,
yeah.
I mean, he's looked good. Yeah, he's looked good. He's had some good outings, but like you still look at it, if you've thrown him every start except for the first one, he's not really helping you all that much. He has two wins. He does have a bunch of strikeouts. He's helping you there, but he's not throwing a ton of innings, so the bulk's not really there. So as good as he's been, it's like fantasy-wise into what we got to think about. It hasn't been great either.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's given up one too many home runs for me. It's like every couple pitches, it seems like.
Yeah. A guy that was interesting this week based on his last two outings was Patrick Sandoval. He had a huge week if you want to go Sunday to Sunday. He had two starts. Last Sunday against Seattle, he had six innings, 10 strikeouts in that game. Today he pitched against Arizona, obviously a good matchup, but it was six innings, two earned runs, four strikeouts. He was someone that I was mildly interested. I think I was interested in him 2 years ago when he got called up. He's kind of has missed stuff, but didn't throw really deep into games. The Angels are kind of using him as like a guy after an opener, that sort of thing too. But velocity's up a little bit. What I liked with him is he's throwing more changeups. He's throwing 13% more changeup. He has a 57% whiff rate on that pitch right now. The pitch has been really nasty. Mm-hmm. Swing strike rate coming in today was 17.8%. And the last 2 years, it was 13%. So this is a guy that gets swings and misses, and maybe he's a pitch mix better right now. Where were you on Sandoval coming into this week with bids?
Yeah, I wasn't super aggressive again, but it's more kind of a result of where some of my pitching staffs are,
yeah,
thankfully, or the need for more offense in a lot of cases,
yeah,
or just for the 12th consecutive week, just bidding on closer speculation.
Right. Do you think Sandoval sticks though? Do you think this is like? I mean, they're probably going six man, so they got a lot of room there. But do you like him going forward? Even if you didn't need him this week?
Yeah, I think of all the pitchers going this week, he was the most interesting. You mentioned the changeup, 30% swinging strike rate, so that's something that you can latch on to. He also generates a ton of ground balls, which is really nice. So he checks a lot of the boxes that you're looking for. Obviously, the control has been a pretty big issue for him throughout his short career. And I imagine that it will continue to be an issue. So I think he's susceptible to those blowups, but any pitcher that you're getting off of the waiver wire is going to do that. And I think he has the upside that you talked about a little bit that is more encouraging and gives you a little bit more hope whenever you pick up a guy on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and I feel like if you're going to pitch somewhere, the AL West is not a bad place to pitch. You probably just want to avoid Houston, maybe a little bit of Oakland. But, I think that, Oakland is kind of streaky. They end up pretty good at the end of the year offense-wise, but they always have some streaks. But Houston's like the only team you really want to avoid in that spot, especially a lefty going into Houston. You don't want that. But I think he's a guy, he faces Detroit this week. So where I got him, I'm going to be throwing him, and I think we'll kind of see what we get. What about two-step guys this week? Guys with two starts, Tyler Anderson, Vladimir Gutierrez, everybody's favorite John Lester. Was there anybody with two starts that you were kind of trying to sneak through at a cheap price, hoping maybe to get some strikeouts and wins this week?
Not really. Yeah, I think with Ty Anderson, I mean, he was really interesting earlier on this year. One thing I've noticed is as the season has progressed, the skills have really deteriorated a lot. His velocity is down just a little bit, but from like 91 to 90, he's had a little bit of a pitch mix change where I think it's his changeup that he's throwing a little bit less. So I was in on him earlier on in the year, but I've kind of moved on and I'm not as interested. Gutierrez is just, I think, a disaster waiting to happen. If you look at kind of, the regression numbers there when it comes to BABIP and the fact that he really doesn't have any skills that jump out of you. Like he's not getting strikeouts. He's walking guys at a decent clip. And so I think that one is going to be a really tough one. John Lester was actually really interesting because just out of hand, I kind of was like, I'm not going with John Lester.
Yeah.
But if you look at his last five starts, like a lot of the metrics that I pay attention to and care about, like in zone contact rate and swinging strike rate, chase rate, like O swing on Fangraphs, they're all headed in a really good direction. And he's throwing the fastball less. He's throwing the changeup a lot more. And he's throwing a cutter instead of his fastball as well. And so he's still John Lester and he's still not good. And I still didn't pick him up and I'm still not playing him, but I can see like a little glimmer of hope there maybe as to why, like, cause I think a lot of times you have to look for like, why do I start him? I think the challenge with him is like, if you get 10 innings out of him, like you're probably getting six strikeouts, which you might be able to get with a bullpen arm.
Right.
Yep. And so it's just really challenging to throw a low K guy like that out there, even if he's got the two step, which is a nice one this week.
Yeah, the only reason I was mildly interested in Lester, I didn't end up doing it, was it's Pittsburgh and the Mets, and the Mets are still pretty banged up with some injuries and stuff, although some guys are coming back. But I think you should probably sneak in before all the guys do. And Your swinging strike rate's up 10 to 10.7%, which kind of surprised me too, even though his velocity's down to 88. So there's a bit, you got to figure the, not only that, the Cubs offense should be able to score on Pittsburgh. So if he throws five innings, good chance at a win, which are really hard to get this year. I've got a couple teams that, you know, wins are just desperate. It seems like every time I get a 4-2 lead, the closer end up coming in and blowing the save. It's just one of those things. Whenever you get a bad win season, those things tend to happen. Our friend Justin Mason commented, he's talking about Cal Quantrill and Jake Arrieta. I'm going to go ahead and pass on both of those. I go with hashtag never Arrieta at this point. It's just something I can't do. What about Tucker Davidson in Atlanta? Has been good through his first three starts, 17.2 innings, 1.5 ERA. He's really good in AAA in his three starts there before he got called up, 0.9 ERA, 32% K rate. The matchups are tough. He's got Boston and St. Louis this week, so not ideal there. But how are you on Davidson? I tried to pick him up last week. Actually, I got outbid. I was a little disappointed because he pitched well again this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think of a lot of the pitchers that we've talked about, Davidson is one of the better bets, and that I think is because of his slider. His slider has been really good, 20% plus swinging strike rate on that pitch. He throws it at a decent clip. I think the challenge with so many guys is, you know, the fastball and whether that's going to be able to play, because it hasn't been a pitch that, you know, that's really been able to get outs or swings and misses for him at all. So we'll see if he faces a good right-handed lineup. You know, and you mentioned Boston and you mentioned St. Louis. I know St. Louis, at least like last week, were one of the best lineups against left-handed pitchers. I'm not sure whether that's changed or not, but those types of matchups scare me away, especially since he's only really been going five innings too in his starts. So again, you know, I think he's solid as it comes, like as compared to a lot of folks on the wire, and worth a shot, but he was also gone in all my leagues, like you mentioned, too. So he was only available in 12s, and there were some other guys that I liked a little bit more there.
I want to talk real quick about some closers, but first, a note from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Craig doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So, Toby, we talked about closers earlier. I didn't feel like this is really a week to find anyone that was going to luck into some saves week. I mean, we got Joaquin Soria, the Diamondbacks finally had a game they could win. And crazy that, by the way, they'd lost 19 straight games on the road, which seems almost impossible. They are so bad. But they had a chance to win a game the other night. He blew the save. It was a rough outing. He gave up three runs, and they lost that game. Stefan Crichton has not been good. Is there anybody in this bullpen that you're remotely interested in rostering, if I'm just going to put it bluntly?
Honestly, no. I had Crichton for probably 4 or 5 weeks, just waiting for that next save opportunity. I think they've had one that Soria won in the last month or something of that. They're just really not good pitchers, and it's really hard to see anything. So even as somebody who's desperate for closers, the combination of the situation and the lack of skill in the bullpen just left me uninterested.
Yeah, Crichton's ERA is 4.8. Soria is at 6. And I looked at him last year. He was on the A's last year. He just walking guys. And just not someone I want coming in ninth inning of games. And I stayed away there too. Ian Kennedy went on the IL. Sounds like he's going to be back this week. So I kind of didn't go very aggressive with the Rangers bullpen just because it sounds like Kennedy might be back on Wednesday or Thursday. Was there anybody here you like? Some people like DeMarcus and Evans, some other names there. Was there anybody that you were remotely interested in Texas at all?
Actually, I ended up getting, I don't know how you say his last name, but Spores.
That's how I was going to go. But what I did was I didn't say it, so you'd have to say it first.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
There's a reason I've done this for a long time.
Yeah. With Spores, I was surprised. I ended up getting him in like probably 4 or 5 leagues, you know, for $3, $7. Just as a speculation, I mean, Kennedy's obviously, it sounds like he's coming back. It's his hamstring. I do think that Spores, that bullpen has some decent arms. There's Spores, there's Evans, you mentioned, there's Jolie Rodriguez, although he's struggled a little bit recently. But I dug into Spores, I was actually incredibly impressed. When you look at the repertoire, he's got a couple really good pitches. His K rate, his K minus walk rate is like 25%. I don't know if that's over the course of the full year, but at least recently, like in his last 10. His velocity is the best in that bullpen as well. And so I kind of just took a stab at him. I'm actually not going to put him in lineups this week because they've only got the five games, two against Houston. So I don't think I'm going to get opportunities. But with Kennedy probably being an arm that gets moved at the deadline, I kind of want to see how it plays out.
Yeah,
he may be a guy that I hold on for a little while. And with only like $3 to $7 invested on him, I feel okay about it.
Yeah, I looked at his 2019 in AAA with the Dodgers, and I came away impressed too. Just a 31% strikeout guy, like he punches guys out, and he was the one guy that I had a couple of bids on, kind of down the line. The five games really messed me up this week though, because if I wanted to use him, I wanted to use him this week. I was hoping they had seven, so at least I get maybe four or five games before Kennedy, and maybe Kennedy comes in and doesn't close the first time and that kind of thing. So I was hoping to get like, you know, four or five games of, you know, Kennedy, not the closer, but the five game schedule really messed me up there. So I kind of pulled back a little bit, but I think that makes sense. I mean, Kennedy, it's a hamstring. Like, he could tweak that pretty easily. And B, you're right, they're going to move him at some point. It's you know, I don't know if you can hold till the end of July, but maybe they move him earlier. But yeah, I thought Spores was the best option there too. What about Detroit? Jose Cisnero is an interesting arm right now. Pitching really well, 3.7 ERA, 26 innings, 30% strikeout rate. He was really good in 2020 in the short season, 3.03 ERA and 29 2/3, 28% strikeout rate. Used to have a bunch of walk issues. It seems like we've been a little bit better the last couple of years. I know he's kind of splitting with Gregory Soto, but it seems like they've kind of lined Cisnero up when they do get some save ops. Were you any interest in the Tiger situation?
Yeah, I actually got him in a few places, like low $20 bids.
Yeah.
I actually have Soto in quite a few places. He's a guy that I picked up recently, just hoping to get lucky. I dove into Cisnero. I actually didn't do it before I ran Fab, just because he was kind of looked like the closer. Yeah. I did it in preparation for the show, and I was like, uh-oh. He's actually gotten much worse recently. The results have been fine.
Yeah.
But, like, he's throwing his sinker more, and, like, everything is kind of cratering. I actually like Soto a lot. Like, if you look at Soto's recent game log, he's been much better. The walk issues haven't been as big, and he's actually been improving. His velocity is up to, I think, above 98 at this point on average with his sinker. He's throwing the slider more. So his skills in the last like 10 games or so have been really strong. So I actually have both of them on a few teams, and I'm just hoping again, like, it's such a terrible strategy, but at this point, I'm so desperate. I'm just like, I'm going to keep both, and I'm going to lean Cisnero right now and have him in there if I need him, or else have like, you know, eight starting pitchers if I can do that too, and then see what kind of shakes out, and hopefully they go with one guy consistently, because it did feel like they wanted it to be Soto earlier this year, and he just wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, every time I look at him, I see the walk rates, and it kind of freaks me out. But you're right. If you look at his like his last, you know, like 13 to 15 outings, the walks have been way less. He had a bunch of outings where he walked at least one guy, two guys. He's just walking guys every outing. It seems like he has gotten a little better. I do think it's Cisnero maybe for right now. I think it's Soto for the long term. So I kind of agree with you there. I think that if I had to play one this week, it'd be Cisnero, with the thought that I'd probably want to play Soto the second half of the season. It's probably what it's going to come down to be.
Totally.
Let's talk about some offense. Sticking in Detroit, they called up Daz Cameron. Any interest here? Kind of a speed power combo guy. 2019, he had 13 home runs, 7 stolen bases. As I look deeper, I got less interested. He hit .214 in 2019. Huge K rate. I just think guys like this, you sometimes can luck into like you know, just some home runs and stolen bases. He already has one of each, but he's 1 of 14 so far. So as I looked into Daz Cameron, I got less interested. But did you have any interest there?
Yeah, you know, he hit that home run off of Liam Hendricks and ruined my Lucas Giolito win in like.
So you already dislike him.
So I'm already off the table. No, I had some smaller bids in places where I needed stolen bases, just because I know the Tigers like to steal.
Yeah.
He's young. He's kind of got prospect pedigree. He seems to be a part of their future, at least somebody that they want to find out whether he's a part of their future or not. And he's been in the lineup the last couple of days. I think he even hit second or leadoff, probably second since Grossman's kind of leadoff now today. So I had a couple of small bids, like $3 bids on the pretty far down on the conditional list. So a little bit of interest just because of that speed power combo. But yeah, like you mentioned, the K rate has been high. The chase rate is really high, 40%, doesn't walk. So it's just hard to see it happening for him.
Yeah, so in the same vein, the guy who I was a little more interested in today was Jake Fraley in Seattle. Another guy that I think, you know, who knows what's going to get, but he, a speed power guy, he had in 2019 had 19 home runs and 22 stolen bases across double A and triple A, hit over 290 in that stretch too. So, like, you know, showed some good stuff. He's 26. So, like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. What I do like with him is he's not a big strikeout guy. He's had some strikeout issues in the majors, but like very small samples, but he's like a low 20 to high teen strikeout guy in the minors across his history. And then this year he's at 21. He struck out a couple times today. So he's at 22%, but a guy who doesn't strike out a ton, and the playing time should be there. Well, you know, Jared Kelnick got sent down. Kyle Lewis is out long term. You know, if he can hit it all, at least there's kind of a runway of playing time in Seattle, where a lot of these guys we talk about picking up, you know, we got platoons, we got, you know, a couple bad games, maybe they're out of it. But it felt to me like Fraley at least has the playing time locked in right now.
Yeah, I really like Fraley. I was actually kicking myself. I had him in a couple bids last week because I think started playing over the weekend and he hit a couple home run, maybe one or two home runs and stole a base or vice versa. And I had him up there and I bumped him down a little bit. And then I saw him this week just going off, you know? And it's one of those things where I'm in a league with Casey Cha and I saw him bid for him last week. And I was just like, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake. I bumped those down. But yeah, I agree. I mean, if you look at him, one of the things that I love is the plate discipline. At least so far this year, his O swing is 14.1%. He's got an over 20% walk rate. He's not going to maintain that, but a guy with speed, especially on the Mariners, one of the teams that steals the most, very aggressive on the bases, even when it's, today, Dylan Moore tried to steal second with a runner on third and less than two outs and got caught. You know, I was like, probably not the best idea, but they're super aggressive. So I like him a lot. He hit a home run off of Bieber today. Yeah. One of his hanging curveballs that just did not look great.
And when your ball doesn't spin quite as much, it hangs a little bit more. It's something there.
Stuff is nice, yeah, right?
No doubt, right?
Yeah. Oh gosh, some of those pitches from him was just yikes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really liked Fraley a lot. I wasn't super aggressive again because it wasn't like a need. But he was one of the guys that I had. He was one of the few hitters that I had above $10 on some of my bids that I had. I didn't get him because I think people were a lot more aggressive with him that needed speed. I really like him for the reasons you articulated.
Yeah, he went I think he was taken in one of my mains. The other one, he went for $67. So he was popular. That was the league Sam Long went for $139. So clearly that's a pretty aggressive main event there.
For sure.
I'm going to ask you a question that you weren't prepped for. Do you know who Bailey Ober is? Because he went for $40 in my main event.
I do know who Bailey Ober is for Minnesota. I was interested because I took a look at I think he struck out 9 or 8. In one of his recent starts.
He had 7 against Houston. So yeah.
He had 7 against Houston. Yeah. That's what it was. So whenever somebody does something like that,
right,
I kind of pay a little bit more attention. But then I dug in, you know, and the swinging strike rate's below 10%. His in zone contact is around 90%. So like elite against. He does get chases out on pitches outside the zone, so the walks won't be too bad. But I just saw that and I just said, you know, like if a guy, you know, it's one thing when a guy strikes out 7 in an outing, but if I don't necessarily see the skills to underlie that, anything's possible in a small sample. Yeah. I just didn't see it necessarily. He didn't really pique my interest.
Yeah, it seems like he doesn't walk anyone, but maybe in the zone a little too much, like you were saying there. I was a little surprised he went for $40 in my main. I did not think he was going to be quite that aggressively bid upon, but. Other hitters, any Albert Pujols bids this week? Max Muncy is on the IL. Pujols is hitting 246 with 5 home runs with the Dodgers somehow in 61 at-bats. I couldn't get myself to do it.
No, I mean, if I had a dollar, though, for every time Pujols had been at the bottom of a conditional list this year, like, I could backfill a lot of my fab. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's so hard to figure out playing time with the Dodgers. You know, even when it's amazing. Even when there are major injuries, you know, like Muncy goes down, you just look and it's like, well, just Taylor goes over to short and Lux goes to second. So there's just not a lot of it's just hard to kind of bet on him. And then when you look at it, the batting average is going to be really bad. We know it's been bad for a while. And so you might get a home run here or there, but he's also kind of overproducing a little bit. So I think there's some regression coming for him as well.
Was there anybody else that you were, really interested in or bidding in a lot of leagues that we haven't mentioned? It seemed like it was a tough week in offense. I kind of looked at Luke Williams. I looked at Jonathan Daza with the Coors home week and, you know, just it's one home run and 2 stolen bases. So you're hoping for batting average, which, you know, seven Coors games, I have no problem picking that up. But was there anybody else that we haven't mentioned that you were really looking at a lot?
You know, I picked up quite a few shares of Daniel Vogelbach this week.
Oh, all right. Going into Coors. Yep.
The Brewers going into Coors. He's got the four games. He's got the three against Cincinnati. I want to say the three against I want to say that three of the four for the first half of the week are against righties. So he should be in the lineup hitting second. And then for the second part of that week, I think he's got I think he's got all three are against righty, or two of three are against against righties. So he should get plenty of plate appearances. We know about the power. It's Coors Field. You know, so I'll take my shot with that just as kind of a util or a corner guy. Also bid on Isaac Paredes of the Tigers.
Yep.
One time, you know, he's got the plate skills. It's just a matter of whether he can put that quality of contact to work, has some prospect pedigree, seems to be playing every day with the Tigers, and they're going to give him some run as well. So, and third base is rough right now. So
every time I look at third base, every time I look at third base in free agency, I cannot even find anybody to write down on my sheet. It's so bad. I don't know why it is. Every week it's like, oh, there's Kelvin Gutierrez and like nothing else.
Yes. Gutierrez just like, he's just ever present on the wire. Yep. And you're like, he always leads in at bats.
Yep. Every time.
But I still can't make myself do it. I still can't do it.
No, I can't either. You're right. Vogelbach is a really good one. He has six of seven righties. So you're all right. It's Gutierrez, Castillo, and Molly. And then he gets three out of four in Colorado against Marquez, Senzatella, and Gray if he comes back. And then Gomber's the only lefty he faces the whole time. So he's going to play six games, I think, second in those in good parks and against, I mean, depends what you think of Luis Castillo right now, but nobody there you're really worried about facing by any means.
I've got Castillo in two places. So every time I listen to the pod and I hear you guys talking about Castillo,
it hurts.
You know, breaks a little bit more of my heart.
Yeah, and the hard part is, and I've said it before, the hard part is like every single guy around there is dealing. Like Walker Buehler threw a shutout today, and like Woodruff's been great, and obviously Corbin Burns has been great. Like everybody I could have taken instead, if I just like, and it was like, it was kind of a toss-up call. I'm like, you know, I like him. I thought Castillo was really safe, which obviously has not been the case, but any other decision would have worked out great. So it's been tough, but been a little better the last like three or four starts. He had the rain delay last start. That was kind of frustrating, but I'm hoping we get something there. Were there any catchers you were thought about at all? Like Max Stassi was kind of the only guy in 12 teamers I thought was interesting, but like I looked and I kind of picked up a couple of the Colorado guys. I picked up either Dom Nunez or Elias Diaz with the seven home games, but that just in spots where I had like Jose Trevino or someone else that was just not going to play very much.
Yeah, I had one place where I needed a catcher. I had Danny Jansen on the IL, and so I picked up Elias Diaz. Yeah, Dom Nunez wasn't available, but
he's gonna play. He'll play three or four. So let's jump into some news and notes. I'll get through this pretty quick. There's some players at the end here I want to talk about, but a little bit of a scare with Ronald Acuna today. He left the game. He was kind of talking to the trainer. They said it's right pectoral tightness. Sounds like it's precautionary more than anything. Some good news there. Friday night was wild. We had Jacob deGrom deal and then leave injured. And then Max Scherzer came out, threw 12 pitches, and then couldn't make a start. It seemed like we were looking for like a really bad Friday night injuries. Sounds like both guys are trying to make their next start. Do you throw both of them this week with what we know right now?
I think you probably do. I mean, just given what your alternatives are, at least in 15 team leagues.
Yeah.
With DeGrom, I mean, it was so fascinating to hear him talk about it, about how he wasn't worried because he's felt what it feels like to have a severe injury there.
Yeah.
And this wasn't it, which is just like remarkable to me. Like, you know, he's probably like gone and gotten like a doc, you know, like he's become a doctor somewhere just so he doesn't have to listen to the Mets training staff. So yes on DeGrom, I think yes on Scherzer as well. You know, as long as it's looking positive, and it depends on what your possibilities, but I think he's supposed to go against Pittsburgh.
Yes.
So it's really hard to pass that up, and it'll be painful if he does have to pass it up.
Yeah, and the only really good thing is both of them throw in the front half of the week. So, like, if they get the, like, I'm almost ready, but I need, like, 2 days, at least they're going to throw this week, too. Whereas if they were throwing Saturday or Sunday, I'd be a little more worried about, like, if they get pushed back, then you get a zero for the week. But I think they're just so elite that you got to throw them, too. But, yeah, DeGrom talking about his elbow is interesting. Like, you and I would, like, be like, oh, my elbow hurts. And he was, like, within a millimeter of where it hurts in the back or front. It was pretty fascinating to hear him talk about that. We mentioned Max Muncy went on the 10-day IL with the right oblique strain. It seems like everybody has oblique strains. They never are short term, so it's definitely not good there. And he's been on fire too. Muncy's been really good like the last 6 weeks. He's been huge. Cody Bellinger was supposed to play today, sat again. This has been a weird year for Bellinger. He can't seem to get on the field.
Yeah, it definitely has. What a bummer too. It was such kind of late breaking news, you know, for the severity of his injury coming into the season.
Yeah,
it's tough. So you just gotta you just got to kind of hope. I do love the Cody Bellinger gifts, though, that we've been given, yeah. You know, where it's just like
staring off into space.
Just looking at the stars. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Luis Severino was a tough one. He had an injury during his rehab outing. It did not look good. He had to be like helped off the field, groin injury, having an MRI Monday. So if you were stashing Luis Severino, I think it's time to unstash.
Yeah, and that's what's so difficult. Like even with him and with Syndergaard, you know, even the best case scenario, you know, it oftentimes doesn't happen. And so folks who've been stashing those guys, you're now looking at, I think Syndergaard's timeline is now September.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Severino will be something similar. And so I think those guys are drops at this point.
Yeah, I do too. And Carlos Carrasco kind of falls in the same boat. You think he's a drop also?
Yeah, you know, I actually, I didn't hear what the latest was. I know that he got like the, I think it was a PRP injection for something in his leg. And it doesn't sound good, which is a little sad.
He was throwing off a mound, and now he's not throwing off a mound, which seems like backwards progress.
Yeah, I have him in a couple early draft champions leagues. And so I was really hoping for them to come back. But at this point, yeah, I think it's best to probably just let go.
I think you're probably looking at like August or something, the way they're talking. And that's just really tough. What about, I want to ask you about one now that we're talking about it. What do you do with in a 15 teamer? I think it's an easy answer, but like a 12 teamer, they had a note today that Jack Flaherty was going to be out. They think he's out to August. Do you still hold someone like that? Say, let's just say it's August 1st, just to use a date. Do you still hold someone like that? Just because how good he is. You still hold him for the next 7 weeks to hope to get those like 2 months or at least 6 weeks out of him at the back end.
I mean, it's such a cop-out, but like it's such a contextual,
it is.
Like depending on your team. Generally, I would probably hold him.
Yeah. That's where I was at too. I had him in a 12-teamer and I just couldn't quite do it. Cause you might get a great 6 weeks and it's going to, even if you get 6 weeks of someone else and then it seems like he's such a top elite guy that I have to hold him. A middling guy out till August, I'd probably be dumping him. But one of those top, like, I don't know, we'll use top 15, top 20 pitchers, however you want to stick Flaherty, whatever box you want to put him in. I mean, I think he's up there enough that I think I got to hold for that.
Yeah, it's kind of the old Steven Strasburg conundrum where everybody was like, well, he's going to be injured. He's not going to throw 200 innings. But you're like, man, but those 150 innings are going to be really good. Yeah. And so I think, you know, as long as you're not like, there's very few situations where I think I would move on from him.
Do you have Sixto Sanchez anywhere?
I don't. I was actually not in on the Sixto love. So I got fortunate there.
I finally dropped him. I said I'd drop him once he had one setback. I dropped him last week, so he's probably going to be like accelerating his rehab anytime now. But I told myself one setback and I have to do it. And I finally stuck to that word. So we'll see how that one works out. But George Springer could be in his rehab as soon as Tuesday. It's pretty wild when you think about the fact that the Toronto is like a top three offense right now and hasn't had more than two games of George Springer. It's crazy like how good this offense could be if he could ever get healthy.
Oh man, when he was back just for those two games, you looked at that lineup and you're just like, what are you supposed to do as a pitcher? Yeah. You know, like right here and not even, and so many of the guys put up great at bats as well. Yep. I mean, you have like Semien at the top there, even Biggio, like he can't get a hit, but he certainly works the pitcher. It's interesting. It's been funny to see their beat writers because every day it's like, he ran the bases today. It's like, he's just running the bases, people.
It's been a weird situation. Then he came back and you could tell he was hurt. It was really ran to first that one time and he's like limping and like looking at his quad and we're like, he clearly is not right. And they left him in and then he DH'd the next day and then back on the IL. It's been too bad. I mean, if you drafted him, it's just been a killer. I have him in the TGFBI, which is the absolute center of all red suitcases. It's just the most unbelievable. My two closers in that league were Trevor Rosenthal and Kirby Yates. So that'll tell you all you need to know right there.
Yeah, I have him in the Tau Wars draft and hold. He was my first offensive pitch after starting Giolito and Nola. And it's been a bummer.
A couple other notes here before we get some players. Ramon Laureano should return this week. It sounds like it's going to be a question whether he goes on a rehab stint or not. So there's a good fist pump. I like that. So it might be the first half of the week. If they don't go rehab, he's going to face some live pitching, do some drills and stuff tomorrow. They're at home against the Angels. So they're at home. He's going to do some work with the team. So it might be during that series, but I'm guessing it's going to be probably this weekend against the Yankees. Byron Buxton's traveling with the Twins on this road trip. They're going to Seattle and Texas. There wasn't really word on when he's going to be activated, but traveling with the team is a really good sign. They can kind of activate him anytime. Lance McCullers, how do you feel about this Astros rotation now? It's going to be he's rejoined the rotation on Tuesday, but piggybacking with Odorizzi, and they're going to go six man. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the Luis Garcia owner in me is excited that they're not kicking anybody out.
That's true.
It's going to be really interesting. I mean, Odorizzi, his velo was actually up a little bit in his last outing. Some of the skills improved as well. So I'm very interested to see what happens with him. I think a lot of people probably still have McCullers and have kind of held on to him. But Odorizzi was popular in my mains this week. So it'll be really interesting. And he's got a really nice two-step next week. I think it's at Baltimore and then at Detroit, or at Baltimore and then versus Detroit or something.
Yeah, you got it right. It's at Camden, at Comerica. So yeah, at Baltimore, Detroit, you're right. Yeah, the six man's tough though. Like you have to have that seven game week to get a two step. But I can't believe how good Framber Valdez has been. Like I mean, I knew he's a good pitcher, but like I figured that something was wrong and it wasn't gonna be great. And they were like, he's gonna miss the season. Now he's gonna come back, and he's made three starts and all of them been great.
Yeah, I was super into him early in the draft season, so I have him on a few early draft champions. I drafted him like in the 60s. Like I was very in on him, and then I was kind of out, and so it's been a nice little boost to get him back. I mean, really tough outings too. I think, didn't he go against the Red Sox twice?
I think so.
You know, just unbelievable. It's been fantastic to watch. So let's see him struggle like when he goes up against Baltimore or Detroit next week. Probably.
It's funny because he had two against Boston. The other one's against San Diego. So like the three really good teams, and he's given up one earned run in each outing. He only went four the first time, but threw seven and seven plus against the Red Sox. Like it's been not that the Astros need any help right now, and it kind of annoys me that they get it, but he's been really good. And you know, in a draft champions format, like if you get 100 and something innings out of him, low 100 innings out of him, that's not going to kill you. I mean, it sucks losing him for the first 2 months, but if he's like good the rest of the way, like that's gonna be a positive.
Yeah, for sure. Especially like given the news, like right when the season started, it's all gravy from here.
I mean, he was done. Like they were going surgery and he was done. So that's good. But let's talk about a few players from over the weekend before we jump out of here. I want to talk about Shane Bieber first. We kind of touched on him joking around earlier about the spider tack, but five earned runs against Seattle in 5 2/3. He allowed 10 hits, had two walks. His ERA is still 3.28. So it's like we're talking about someone that's still been really good. But you look at his whip, 0.87 last year, 1.05 in 2019. It's 1.25 right now. Jumped up today a little bit. The K rate's down 7%, down to 34%. The walk rate's up a little bit. And then, of course, you saw all the screenshots on Twitter today about the spin rate going way – and it's like way down, like significantly down in this start compared to his year-to-date average. So what, it's not even like looking at last year. We're looking at so far this year, comparing that to this start, and it's been way down. So where are you at Bieber right now? I mean, obviously, you're starting him every week. You're not taking him out of the lineup. But if you were to draft right now, is he like still your third starter, or would you bump him down somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably bump him a little bit just because, like, I mean, there's been some – like Woodruff, for instance, just stands out to me as a guy who's really shown that last year was not a fluke and continues to be great. The thing about Bieber is it's like you mentioned, everybody's kind of being, I think, critical of him because of what they maybe expected from him.
Right.
Still got a 3.2 ERA. The whip is high. The walks have increased. I think he's like he got used to nibbling last year and his stuff has not been as good. One thing I think is interesting, I haven't heard a lot of talk of it, but his velocity is actually down 1 mph. I think that was a major difference for a guy who doesn't have a good fastball. Like command wise, he does, but like just from a stuff perspective, like the fact that he was up 1 mph last year and now he's back to where he was. I think what you have to do is look at that 2019 and just assume that that's probably what you're going to get. You know, maybe even, you know, not that. I think that the challenge too is you look at his BABIP. It's really high. He's always had some BABIP issues. I think it's like 313 for his career, but he had a 500 BABIP today. Some of the hits were just kind of ridiculous little bloopers. He also gave up some bombs to Kyle Seager and Fraley. But so I think, you know, you'll probably see some of those contact issues happen a little bit more, but I think he's such a good pitcher. He'll be able to adjust even today. Like he seemed like a different pitcher after the fourth inning, those last two innings. I think he struck out four. And so I think he's going to need to figure it out. And like you said, the sticky stuff, like the RPMs were down 300, probably wasn't using it. So his grip wasn't as good on the curve. He left like that 0-2 curve to Seager for the two run homer was just like,
I felt like he did that zero times last year. Like he never, he got to 0-2 and like the at bat was over.
Yeah. And so, you know, just stuff like that, where I think he's going to figure it out. He's a smart guy. He's always worked, you know, because he's got the great command. And so I think he'll be successful, but we never should have expected him to repeat what he did last year. It just wasn't sustainable from like a strand rate perspective and a Babbitt perspective and all that stuff. So I still think he's very good, but, you know, maybe he's kind of back into the first round type of guy now.
Yeah, and for all the problematic people ripping on my Twitter, like today was the first day he gave up more than three runs in a game. Like, what are we really complaining about too much? I mean, again, he has not been the 1.60 ERA guy, but he didn't give more than three runs in a game all year until today. Like, come on, let's just chill a little bit.
And if he goes out and in his next two starts, you know, those balls don't fall in, and let's say he puts up a WHIP of 0.75 over two starts with a strikeout per inning. All of a sudden, we're talking about a guy with a high twos ERA, you know, a one WHIP, and the most strikeouts in all of baseball, which he has. You know,
it's wild that he had that like stretch of it was like, I remember it starts 25 with 8 strikeouts in a row, and now his last 6 starts, he has 8 more than 8 strikeouts once. Like, it's really weird how everything's just kind of falling off the table strikeout wise there.
Yeah, his walk rate too. If you look at his rolling walk rate, it's up to like 12% or something like that over his last 5 games. Like, he's not getting chases in the way that he was before. And whether that's like, you know, hitters learning or just the pitches not necessarily being where they need to be, you know, we'll see. But he hasn't had that, like, I feel like aces always have that streak of 4 or 5 starts where they just absolutely dominate. He had that a little bit towards the beginning, but not quite. And I feel like he'll have that at some point this year. And that'll kind of make the difference between a very good and a great season.
Or what Jacob deGrom does every single start for the whole season.
I mean, I was thinking about, like, he's at the point where if he gives up one earned run in 18 innings, his ERA goes up, you know?
I hope people realize you're watching like historical time of season. Like, it's unbelievable what he's doing. I just hope he stays healthy, because the whole more runs driven in than given up thing is just an insane stat in June.
It's unbelievable.
Bo Bichette, we talked about Toronto earlier, scoring a bunch of runs. He is leading the majors in runs. He has 56 runs scored already. Sometimes we don't talk about that as a category very much, but it's one of the 5 categories. He's got 56 runs. I think second is Acuna at 49. And Mark Canha is actually third at 49. Somewhere it's like right in there. He had a monster day, 4 hits, 5 runs scored, 3 RBIs. He homered and stole a base. Hard hit right before today was at 52.7%. Barrel rate's over almost 12%. Strikeouts are up a little bit, but he's a 24% strikeout guy. Like, we can deal with that in today's game. The walk rate's up. Swing strike rate is a little bit up, so maybe the strikeouts will go up a little bit. But, I mean, it's just all there. And more than anything, the lineup is insane for runs and RBIs. He's at 13 home runs. He's 8 stolen bases. Is he going to be a first-rounder next year, a top 10 player next year? If you had to guess his ADP for next year right now, what do you think it would be?
Yeah, there's just so much talent at the top. I'd say back end of the first round. I think he'll be one of those guys who kind of – where you have like 4 or 5 guys that have a similar profile, and it's just whoever your preference is of that player, I think he'll end up going there. But I've been impressed. I wasn't huge on him just because the track record was so low. You'll notice a trend in that you know, some other guys. But, he's been phenomenal, and that lineup is just, like you mentioned,
it's
incredible.
Yeah. It's gonna be a fun summer in Buffalo with them just mashing the ball in there and the ball traveling.
It's not even warm yet.
I know, it's crazy. Sticking in the AL East, I wanted to ask you about a guy that I have been struggling with so far this year, is Jameson Taillon. I loved him in 2018, I think it was, when he had that really good season at 3.2 ERA, and I was hoping it was going to come around. I know it's a second Tommy John, and results from that are always kind of all over the place. But it's weird you look at him, and the ERA is horrible. It's 5.74, accentuated by the fact he didn't get out of the first inning this weekend against the Phillies. He just got smoked on Saturday against Philadelphia. It's weird that you look at his strikeout rate. It's like 25%, pretty solid. The walks are up a little bit for him, but 7.3%. His xERA is 3.9. Like, we're talking about a guy that – you know, you look at some of the metrics and you kind of think maybe it could turn around. Strand rate's only 67%, you know, unlucky there. Babbitt's 317. Home runs have hurt him, but he's got a career high swinging strike rate. Am I crazy to think that there's a little bit of turnaround coming in time, or am I just kind of seeing what I want to see on him?
I don't know, because if I am,
be honest, I can take it.
Well, so here I think is the conundrum with Jamison Tyone is the metrics all look really, really good. But his major issue is the home runs. And I think the challenge for him is the reason his skills look so much better than they have previously is because he's no longer throwing the sinker, which doesn't get the swinging strikes, which isn't a strikeout pitch. He's always struggled with in-zone contact. Now it's better now because he's throwing the four seam. But now he doesn't have a 50% ground ball rate, right? Yep. He's got a 38% ground ball rate. And so his home runs per nine right now is two.
Yeah.
I think it's 2.09. But the thing is, he's given up 15 barrels and 10 of those have been home runs, which is a fairly reasonable, slightly higher barrel to home run. But also he's in Yankee Stadium, which again, if you're talking about center in the gaps, you know, it's not as bad, but you can get some cheapies in there as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that's his challenge is the skills are better because of the pitch mix change, but now he's got this issue with the home runs because of that. And so you're kind of in this situation where he just doesn't have the stuff at this point, I think, especially with the velo drop that he's had since he was fully healthy, where he can kind of do both things effectively. And I think that's kind of the challenge that I see with Tyone. So I certainly think there's a little bit of regression to his way. There are very few pitchers that have a 2.09 home run per nine. So there's some regression coming, but whether it's going to be the level of regression you need, I'm not quite sure.
I don't know if you know the answer to this. Do you know why he switched from the sinker? Is it an injury thing? Is it a Yankees team concept thing? Do you have an idea why he threw 20% sinkers in 2019. He's thrown it like 15 times all year.
Yeah, my guess would be a philosophical difference.
Yeah.
I mean, he's super smart. Like if you follow him on Twitter, he'll engage a lot and talk about kind of his arsenal and things like that. And I think he's a guy who saw, you know, four-seam fastball up in the zone.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of a recipe that people are having for success. Don't put the ball in play, you know, getting away from Ray Searidge and the heavy sinker usage in Pittsburgh, you know, but I'm not sure he's got the stuff now. Maybe next year, if he's able to have that velo tick, get back to where it's been. But I just think it's a really challenging arsenal to be effective with.
What do you do with him in leagues? A 15 team round, you can drop him, but do you throw him this week against the A's?
Is it at Oakland? Or it's home? It's home.
It's home.
What I would do is I would look at his splits. I mean, Oakland is a heavy righty lineup, I think. And so I'd kind of take a look at that, do a little bit of analysis. It's tough. Like, if you're not going to start him at home against the A's, like, not that the A's are bad, but it's right. Just like that's a start you need to have him in there for. So, you know, I would probably have him in there. I'd give it another shot.
What about a 12 teamer? Do you consider him a drop? Do you consider him a bench and watch for a while? What would you do in an online championship kind of thing if you had Tyone?
Yeah, I think it's maybe bench and watch. He reminds me a lot of Drew Smyly. I have in a lot of leagues where I'm just like, I never feel good about the start.
Did you watch his start today?
I didn't watch it. I'm normally like on my phone, just watching like the little dots on my thing, like going around, you know?
So but, he got to the fifth inning. They were up 5-0 and they scored two runs with two outs in the fifth. And someone was warming up and I was like, this feels like the worst 4 2/3 ever. And then he gave up a kind of an end of the bat hit to Aguiar. And then Corey Dickerson gave up and hit a chopper. And I forget who it was at shortstop, but like caught it in his glove and flipped it to first. And it was like bang, bang. And I don't know if he was going to face the next batter or not. I think they were leaving him because Dickerson's a lefty. I think it was I think he might've been coming out. I think there was a righty coming up next. I was like, this is going to be 4 2/3, the 5-0 lead. It was going to be brutal. And it ended up being a really good outing, a really good line, a really good outing with the win. But it's crazy how close some of these things are. They almost replayed it. And Mattingly was like, no, we're good. And I was like, oh, thank God.
The margins are so fine in these starts. Like,
so crazy.
Even if it's 4 2/3, you're like, I just want, because that's what it was. I think there was two outs and maybe one run had been scored.
Yep.
And then it was all those hits in a row. That's the thing is it feels like this year there's more situations where guys just get tons of hits in a row. Like Alex Cobb the other night, right?
Yeah.
He's like cruising and then he gives up six hits in one inning and they're all singles and doubles.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do you do about that? Right.
Yeah. I was sure we're getting this. And then he threw a wild pitch to score the second run. I was like, here we go. And then Dickerson had a play. I was like, It's funny because like through he in a second he's put two guys on. They struck out Jazz, Aguiar, and someone else. He struck out like three and Marte. He struck out like the three best hitters on the team. And then he cruised to the third and fourth, and he's cruising to the fifth, and all of a sudden two guys on. I was like, oh, here we go. And you know, Starling Marte never gets out right now. So it's just but it's one of those things. Like if you just went home and looked at the box, you're like, oh, Smiley pitched really well. They got a win. That's fantastic. Whereas yeah. I'm like having an ulcer from watching the start. It was terrible.
Oh man.
What do you do with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa right now? This dude is second in the majors in stolen bases. I mean, out of freaking nowhere. I mean, we knew he could steal some bags. Like last year and the year before, he's like, oh, we have a catcher that might steal six bases. Like there's value there. But he has 15 stolen bases. He has two more stolen bases than Trey Turner. He's only played four more games than Trey. I know Trey missed a couple games, but he's only played four more games. He's hit 294. He has five home runs somehow, which might be even crazier than the 15 steals. This guy's like a huge fantasy value right now. Are you buying any of this at the moment?
I mean, what is there to do other than just to love him?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I've got him in a few places. I think the thing about him is the speed is legit, right? Like last year he stole eight, I think, in the shortened season. He's increased that where the Rangers have been more aggressive on the base paths. The batting average is going to come down. His BABIP is really high right now. He's not going to continue to hit this many home runs. I think he has six barrels and five home runs, something like that. But he's just got a great profile. I mean, his plate discipline isn't great, but he makes a ton of contact. He puts the ball in play. Hits a lot of grounders, which isn't great for power, but will get you on base, you know, a little bit more than fly balls, especially when you don't hit him too hard. And if he can get to 10 home runs and he gets to 25, 30 stolen bases with a 260, 270 batting average and a ton of runs hitting, you know, just at the top of that lineup and getting on base, it's going to be, it's beautiful. I mean, if you own him right now, like yesterday's game, like this is how I felt with the Rangers. It was like, they're playing the Dodgers. Really tough matchups, but man, if they can get on base, they're going to steal a lot of bases.
Because the Dodgers give up a ton of steals. He had three steals yesterday, right?
Yeah, he had three steals yesterday. Gallo had a steal today, a stolen base yesterday. I was just hoping that Nick Solak could get on base somehow just to steal bases, but it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the home runs are a little wild. Like he's a 2.8% barrel rate. He's a 32% hit. Like, he's just not a guy that, but you're right. If he can hit five the rest of the way and he goes 10, 25, like where he was drafted, third base and shortstop eligible. I mean, one of the values of the drafts, it's wild. I didn't think that, I thought he was fine where he was and, you know, he's fine to grab him and maybe get 10, you know, 10 or 12 steals, but this has been, you know, far, far beyond what I ever thought.
Absolutely.
Another similar kind of guy, Adam Frazier. Like, I don't really pay attention to this guy very much, but he's hitting 336. Like, I knew he was kind of getting some hits, but he had two more hits Sunday. He never strikes out, 10.7% strikeout guy. So just kind of walking into those hits, never strikes out. Only two home runs, four stolen bases. He only stole one last year. He's never stolen 10 bags. So if he can get to 12 to 14, what do you do with a guy like this? Like, no power, a little bit of speed, but he's hitting 336. Like, how much do you factor this in? How much can you play him every week? Do you just kind of ride the hot batting average? What do you do with someone like Adam Frazier leading off for a bad team?
Yeah, I mean, for him, it all depends on the team. Like, I have him on a couple of teams that are actually doing really well in home runs. And so it's nice because they're also doing really bad in batting average.
Yep.
And he's been great. I mean, he's playing above his head. I think his BABIP is like either 400 or 390 or something, and he's career around like 320. So I think he hits like 280 when all is said and done this season, but he's making a ton of contact. You know, he's getting on base. He is stealing some bases as well. So I think he's kind of fine. He's just one of these guys where hopefully you have some better options and you can kind of mix and match, but he's got the outfield eligibility too. He's a great guy to have on your bench and be able to play in the right situations and not a terrible guy to have in there every single week, you know, at least for the time being, until you notice that you're way behind in home runs and then you need to swap him out for some middle infielder that's out there that's hitting home runs this year.
Yeah, good luck finding that. But it's interesting. I mean, I think that's a key point you make. It's really team dynamic. Like, he works great on some teams and other teams, even hitting 336 doesn't work very well. Like, it's just, it really depends on what team you're on. But you mentioned Aaron Nola earlier. He pitched really well today against the Yankees. 7 2/3, three hits, no runs, nine strikeouts. Had not been great before today. His ERA was over four. And we're in a season where it feels like everybody's ERA is low because there's been a lot of really good pitching. Although that seemed to change this weekend. There were a lot of high scoring games this weekend. But the K rate bump that we saw in 2020 is gone. He's back down to 2018, 2019 levels. He's is about 27%. The key with Nola, and I think the thing that gets lost a little bit, they mentioned today on the Yankees broadcast, it's not that he just makes every start. He has not missed a turn in the rotation in 40 years. Like, that is incredible for a pitcher. Like, that does not happen for any pitcher. They said in the last four seasons, he's not missed a turn through the rotation, which amazed me. Ground ball rate's down, though. He's always like a 50% ground ball guy. It's down to 41%. He's given up a lot more fly balls. The swing strike rate is still solid, 12.8%. With Nola's ERA, is it? I think it's like 3.8 something right now for the start today. Where are you with Nola now? Like, he was kind of one of those second round guys in drafts, but he's been a little disappointing. Do you feel like we're kind of going to get one of those stretches you talked about now, where like an ace just kind of gets hot for a while?
Yeah, you know, I feel like one of Nola, there's a couple challenges with Nola. Number one, just the schedule so far. I don't have it in front of me, but like, it feels like he's had a ton of really difficult matchups, like not a lot of easy going. Maybe I'm just making that up.
I'm looking right now. He has an at Colorado. He has two Atlantas. He has an at Toronto. He has a Boston and at Cincinnati. Oh, another, and three Atlantas. So yeah, you're right. It's been a lot of tough offenses in there.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Nola, it's so fascinating to me is like, this is what's beautiful about drafting aces is like, Nola is struggling. Everybody's frustrated, but his ERA is like 3.7 and a 1.2 whip, right? And he's had this really difficult time. If you look at his pitch mix, actually, it's interesting because like all the skills are good enough, right? They're kind of traditional Nola. They're not last year's skills.
Yeah.
But he's actually throwing his sinker less, his four seam more, which might help explain why that ground ball rate has gone down. And he's also throwing the changeup less because his major change last year was he started throwing not only the curve, I think it was the changeup that he just increased the usage of. So he's kind of gone away from that a little bit. And I wonder why exactly that is. But, you know, yeah, I think once he gets some decent matchups, once they start playing Central or whatever is happening that's having him miss
right.
These kind of nice matchups, I think he's going to be really good. He's going to be a low threes ERA guy, a 1.15 whip, and he's still striking out, you know, 10 guys per nine. It's fantastic. And the innings, I mean, the volume, he has 85 innings pitched already, yep. I think, before today.
Yeah, and at some point, like, elite volume is a huge thing right now. I mean, there's a lot of guys. There's going to be a lot of guys that I think we're going to see in July and August, maybe skip a start or two. Or, you know, we did, Milwaukee talked a lot about adding 100 innings to guys, and we're getting to the point some of those guys we got to think. And, like, Freddie Peralta had 30 innings last year. Like, if they go with 130 on him, like, he's like already halfway done with the season. I don't think they'll do it. I think they're in contention. There's no way they can just shut him down. But, I mean, at some point, teams are going to have to start thinking about this as we get closer to some of these innings limits that maybe they have in their head somewhere.
Yeah, totally. It's volume is going to be huge. There are some pitchers that are really going to carry teams because of that. And it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it because it'll be something where we'll find out about it second half of the season, right?
Of course. Like
where that's where really those guys who can throw the volume will start to carry your team a lot more.
Yeah, and I think that's where somewhere Aaron Nolan's going to come in and just be so valuable. We look at the end of the year, just the innings thrown, and they're going to be good innings. Maybe not, you know, maybe not Garrett Cole, Jacob deGrom innings, but so good and so many of them that I think he's going to earn his draft day price by the time we're done. The guy I want to ask you about that I'm having a little trouble with right now is Trevor Story. He was a first-round pick. He got hurt, but, like, let's take the injury out of it. He just hasn't been great even when he's been healthy. He's at 242 right now, which – playing half game is cores is like that's really bad. He only has five home runs. There was a stretch in the first 3 weeks where he hit like a bunch of barrels that like didn't go out in home runs. They were expected home runs. They didn't go out. There was a bunch of weird stuff with him, but does have 9 stolen bases to kind of save his value a little bit. K rate and walk rate are still about where they normally are, so good there, but he's not hitting the ball hard. You look at his hard hit rate, it was 46% last year, or in 2019, 45.6% in 2018. 35% right now. It was like low 40s last year, like way under his career norms. Barrel rate's 8.2%. His Statcast page, you know, look at it, just kind of blah. There's nothing that sticks out as really impressive. I know he might get traded, but we're going to do a summer of Coors Field right here. What do you think we're going to get from Story in these next couple months here?
Yeah, I mean, there's some positive signs just in the terms of like his home run per fly ball is lower than it's ever been so far. You know, the BABIP is low as well, but there's also some concerning pieces. You have the ground ball rate is up a little bit. I mean, it's up a lot from last year, but up a little bit from where it usually is. The exit velo, like his max exit velo is down for the second consecutive year. So he's not getting that like elite max exit velocity. And the barrel rate has never been amazing. Like he had one season where it was really good, but it's always been around 8%, which is solid. But it just makes you wonder a little bit, like the combination of the ball with maybe the injury that he had earlier in the year. that's just kind of been a perfect storm for him so far. So certainly I think, you know, with the stolen base power combo that you're likely to get moving forward, I think he should be fine. But, you know, it's that first round value that you're really hoping for that is going to be hard to, it's hard to see. And the thing is, it looks so certain now, but things can change so quickly. Like a month ago, Kyle Tucker was batting 150 and now he's hitting like 260. So who knows what lies in store, but there are at least a little bit of concerns there in the batted ball profile.
Yeah, I'm hoping this looks really dumb in a week when he has 7 home games and hits 4 home runs or something like that. But I mean, let's look at, he's got 23 RBIs, and granted, that's a factor of the fact the other guys in his lineup, or that lineup's pretty bad right now. I mean, it's pretty much him and Ryan McMahon and Blackman, and there's like just nothing else there. And it's just not we expect it just to be automatic because it's Coors, but you still need guys that hit the ball. Like, you still need good players there. It's just, it's weird because he's kind of killing his trade value right now, and that has to hurt the Rockies. He's a free agent. Like, he's kind of killing himself with money right now. It's just, he's got the elbow injury, and you wonder about that throwing from shortstop. There's a lot going on right here that kind of freaks me out a little bit. And, you know, all my first round picks have been bad, as it kind of comes out to be. I have him and Christian Yelich, which is neither one has been a first round value. It's been rough. I just should have skipped the first round and gone to Bo Bichette in the second round. We've been good, but yeah, there's enough here that I'm a little bit worried. I watch him play, and just not the first couple of weeks, he was hitting the ball hard and just kind of getting lucky. And I feel like his last like 5 or 6 weeks, you know, taking out the injury there, I feel like he's not even doing that.
Yeah. I mean, the one good thing I'll say is that he hasn't, when he struggled a few years ago, he was hitting like 50% fly balls and he was just popping up everything. Yeah. He's at least not doing that, which should keep that average at least, you know, reasonably high. But yeah, it's tough, you know, and again, it's like you said, hopefully we look bad next week because
I'm hoping.
We still have like 55, 60% of the season left to go. And we've seen how a good month or a good 2 months can carry a guy for a full season.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're like, most people have played like 65 games. I mean, almost everybody has almost 100 games left. I mean, it's such a long, long season. There's been a lot of things that we're going to say now that, you know, in 2 months we'll be like, oh, we should have realized that it was going to come around. But there's been enough here that I'm a little bit more worried than I thought I'd be after I kind of dug in a little deeper on him.
Yeah.
Last guy I want to ask you about is someone that I seem to struggle trying to figure out where to draft, is Chris Paddock. Pitched really well today against the Mets, 6 innings, 6 hits, no walks, 9 strikeouts. So that's really nice that, you know, the walk rate's been up a bit and the K rate was down. So good to see him not walk anybody and punch out 9 guys, give 2 earned runs. Overall, though, 4.14 ERA in 58.2/3 and like 58.2 innings. And, you know, in a year where there's a lot of good ERAs out there, that 4.14 is not really doing a lot for you. Where are you on Paddock? Is a guy that I struggle to kind of figure out, and I usually end up avoiding him. And I just, it's worked the last couple of years, but I have trouble kind of figuring out who he is as a pitcher.
Yeah, you know, I did not believe in him his first year, and I had him one place last year on a team that I share. And I don't know. It's just it's challenging to see him being successful with just the two pitches that he throws. And, you know, it's kind of like, I'm always looking when I'm looking for a guy to like change my mind, I'm looking for something to change. Yeah. And in diving into his profile this year, I still just don't see it. Like, I see a guy who's heavily BABIP dependent, you know, on like whether he's successful or not. You know, when he has been successful as a pitcher, like it's when he's had extremely low BABIPs, and, you know, he gives up, at least he has been giving up a lot of fly balls. I haven't checked this year, but like last year I had him and it was just a lot of home runs, a lot of arm contact with that four seam up in the zone. And so it's hard to put a finger on it with Paddock, but I think he's maybe just kind of mediocre. I mean, that's the thing. And a guy who's mediocre, who doesn't walk that many guys, is fine. And I think that's where he got a little bit off last year, was he started walking guys, which he hadn't done before.
Yeah, and pitches for a good team, and there's some good stuff there. But like, I think that 2 years ago we thought this was like the next ace. Like, they were, I mean, he was drafted really highly last year, and you know, it's interesting. You mentioned the hard contact last year was off the charts. I mean, his hard hit rate was huge, his barrel rate was huge. The barrel rate is still the same. The hard contact is down about 9%, but the barrel rate is still 11%. So when he is giving up some really hard, he's got 17 barrels already this year. I don't know. Every time I watch him, I just expect a little more, and I think that's just kind of reputation and what he came up as in that first year was so good. You know, someone I think it's going to kind of be overdrafted for a while here.
Yeah, totally. I mean, a good thing to track is just like, it sounds so basic, but the K minus walk for him, you know, started off at 21%, then it was 18% last year, and now it's down to 16.1%. Kind of 14% is league average.
Yep.
And so, you know, when you hit that spot, you're kind of looking at a league average type of guy without necessarily anything that's dominant. I mean, even his changeup, which is a really good pitch, is not dominant like some guys' changeups are. Like, think about Sandoval, who we talked about earlier. That's a guy who has a dominant pitch. Paddock really just doesn't have that.
Yeah, it's a 29% whiff rate pitch, which is, you know, not a bad pitch, but you see some of these numbers in the 40s and stuff, and a guy with a dominant pitch, and he throws the curveball 10% of the time, kind of shows it, but he's still just really a two-pitch guy. It's, I don't know, one of those guys that I kind of always expect to be better than he is, just kind of never is whenever I watch him. Anybody else that you want to talk about? Anything else that's on your mind before we jump out of here? I've always, you know, we always tend to talk long, and we have again, but I want to see if there's anybody you want to talk about.
No, nobody really to add. I just think, like, I think we've talked about a lot of guys, like guys who are struggling or perceptions of guys who are struggling. And really, it sounds super basic, but looking at some of those kind of quote unquote luck numbers to see where people are at, whether it's BABIP, home run per fly ball for pitchers, things like that, you know, to try to make some of these determinations of where guys can go. But just appreciate the opportunity to be here. Again, it's one of, if not my favorite podcast that's out there in fantasy baseball. So it's a real privilege to be invited on here and to talk fantasy baseball with you. As always, really excited. I'm really excited to go in person to the NFBC next year in Vegas.
Yes.
Meet you in person there.
Missing these last 2 years in person has been just, it's been tough. I mean, obviously there's a lot of tough stuff going on there, but like, it's a weekend that I look forward to every year. And it's funny because people are like, oh, you know, do people talk? I'm like, everybody's so nice and friendly. And like, you kind of had these personalities that you think of either on Twitter or the message boards or crap like that. And everybody's super nice. Everybody's super friendly. People come up to you and introduce themselves. It's just a great atmosphere and great experience. You should definitely, even if you don't, I mean, you play main event, so you're going to play anyway. But even if anybody that doesn't play main event, or, you know, it's an expensive league and a lot of people can't afford it. And it's insanely expensive for fantasy baseball. I get that. I was fortunate enough to win early. So like, I kind of have been playing in house money for many, many years. And it's been a benefit. Like, I quit playing football for a while because I didn't do well. And I'm like, this is a lot of money to play. So, but even if you don't, like, come out, hang out with friends. It's a really good place to meet everybody. Everybody's really friendly. I end up going to dinner with random people I don't know and end up becoming friends with them 2 hours later. So it's one of those things that, you know, when you get people have such the same interests and you could talk, all of them could talk about baseball for hours. It's just, it ends up being really, really fun. So definitely, I would say definitely come out for the live drafts you can. I look forward, very much look forward to that. But before we get out of here, tell everybody where they can find your work. You know, I listen to your podcast. You said nice things about ours. I do appreciate that. I listen to you guys all the time. One of the few that I listen to. I try not to listen to too many because I don't want to get too much in my head and want to have my own original thoughts and stuff. But I do listen to you guys. You guys have a really good rapport and fun. So tell everybody where they can find you, can hear you, et cetera. Follow you on Twitter, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, the best place to reach me on Twitter is at BatFootCrazy. That's where I put out most of my content and information. I'll put out the podcast there. The podcast is BatFlip Crazy Fantasy Baseball. I do that every Tuesday night with Bubba from the Bench with Bubba podcast. Yeah, that's about it. I have a website, batflipcrazy.com, but I don't really keep it updated. So I'll mention it, you know, in a cursory form, but just tweet at me, follow me. Let's have a conversation about fantasy.
Beautiful. I love it. Well, thanks again for joining. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you were able to jump on. Glad to be able to, the schedule worked out, because I, you know, had talked to you a few times, talked to you a lot of time on Twitter, but never had like a full conversation. So it was fun to do. Again, if you want to follow Toby on Twitter, he is at BatFlipCrazy. I am at Scott Jenstead. We are sponsored by WynnBET. That's WynnBET. We do appreciate their sponsorship for the show. If you can please rate or review the podcast. As I always say, this helps out the podcast a lot. It goes a long way to help people find the podcast, etc. So if you do listen to us, enjoy it. Please do leave a bunch of stars where we haven't listened to your podcast and say a nice comment. That'd be great. Other than that, Jeff will be back next week. If anybody's missed him, you know, and they haven't missed me, I understand. But if anybody missed him, he'll be back on next Sunday. Look forward to that. Other than that, hope everybody has a great fantasy week. Hit us up on Twitter with questions, anything like that. And hope everybody has a good one. Take care.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.